Liz Stringer. Her life may have taken her around the world, in and out of relationships, addictions, and mental health challenges, but it also produced 5 memorable albums, plus an unforgettable collaboration and a live album. Now 24 years since the first recording, her 6th album, First Time Really Feeling, feels like a metamorphosis. 10 tracks weave through tales of love, hate, struggles, and we come out the other side feeling rejuvenated and ready to push ahead with resolve. The album is our feature album on 2SER All This Week, and we are so excited to have Liz Stringer on the line live on the Tuck Shop. Hello, Liz.
Hi, Mick. How are you?
Hey, I'm so good. How are you?
Good. I'm glad this is working. It's like the last time I put out an album, which wasn't that long ago, with Dyson Stringer Chloe, we never did interviews over Zoom, but since the pandemic, Zoom's the port of call, isn't it?
The world has changed. We're even choosing it over our phones now because it usually sounds better.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Congratulations on the album. It's really exciting, of course, to have an album released anytime, but it's been a little while between drinks for you and your solo stuff, 5 years. I've been listening to it on repeat for the last week or so, and it makes me feel different every time I listen to it. And it feels like feelings really are at the core of this album, and of the title, of course. Now that it's out, what are your feelings around the record, particularly as it was recorded maybe some time ago, and it might have felt like a while before it dropped? How are you feeling about it now?
I'm feeling really great. Like right now, we released it on Friday, and I did an in-store Friday night at Rocksteady Records in Melbourne, and then two more in-stores yesterday.
Yeah.
And it was just, I'm so exhausted, but really, really happy because, it's been 3 years since we recorded it. And it's been just a really long kind of process getting it done. So I have that sort of exhaustion of having, kind of finished a marathon or something.
Sure.
And just feeling very tired, but really kind of proud and satisfied. So, this is the beginning. It's just come out, but just the fact that it's been released and people get to hear it makes me feel just really happy. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. It must feel like you're halfway through the marathon because, half the marathon is creating it and then the other half is performing it and talking to people like me on the radio or doing shows around the country. So, yeah, you're sort of halfway there.
Well, totally. And, really the stuff that's within my control or my power as an artist is what I have is the creative process and recording. And then once it gets to release, I have a great team around this album, and there's lots of process around kind of releasing it and getting it out there. But really, the hard sort of gratifying work of actually creating it is done, and now it's just up to this little baby to go out into the world and kind of do its thing, So it definitely feels like, as a musician, my work is in this particular process that's over 90% of it, of course. Sure. Yeah.
I mean, like you say, you began writing, well, you wrote much of this album and recorded it in 2018 when you just moved to Canada. Can you take us back to that time in your life, what it was like moving to the other side of the planet, writing and recording an album in a new environment, new people, new producer? Must have been just all felt very new.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I'd spent time in Toronto on and off for the last few years touring there. I had a bunch of friends before before I moved. So, but yeah, it's a different feeling kind of intending to actually live there as opposed to dropping in for a few weeks over their summer, for sure. And it's daunting. I remember it feeling sort of daunting, a little bit lonely at the start, because so much of it was really that I needed a bit of space personally. Like I'd recently gotten sober and changed a lot of the way that I was living, and it was, I kind of felt like I needed to go somewhere else to regroup and to kind of reinvent a new way to live. So
yeah.
I was kind of grappling with a lot of that stuff. But making the record, which I did really early on in having moved there, like in the first few weeks, was just a way to like Chris Stringer, who's the producer, who's no relation of mine, just happens to have the same surname, which is bizarre. We became really close, and same with all, I did with all the other band members that played on the record, and so it was a big process of helping me settle in. But it was an intense period in my life. Yeah.
Yeah, I read that obviously the newfound sobriety, and you were finding it tough to be in Melbourne and sort of the places you'd been previously, and a lot of things were triggering. So moving to another city, although extreme, seems to have been the thing that would have helped, I guess.
Yeah, I'd lived overseas before. I'd lived in Germany for a few years in my like very late teens and early 20s, and it just felt like the right time to go, you know, to go again. And even though I'd been, as I said, spent time on and off in Canada, I wanted to make a more permanent move. And in fact, I'm now a permanent resident there. My permanent residency just came through when I came back here to tour, and then the pandemic happened. So
so you haven't been back since.
Haven't even entered the country as a permanent resident yet. But
are you still looking to go back? So after the tour and sort of the album settled in, you're looking to head back?
I think I'll go back when it feels kind of safe and the right time to do that. Yeah, because of course we're so lucky here with the pandemic, the way that it's panned out, the fact that we're an island, and you know that we've basically stopped international travel, which you know is problematic in many ways. But you know, compared to other places in the world where it's you know, it's sort of easy sometimes to forget how intense it is in other places, isn't it?
Because it's completely it's
relatively normal here, but
it is definitely too extreme some certain parts of this world right now.
Totally, absolutely, yeah.
Now, you mentioned Chris Stringer, who not only pursued you to collaborate on this record, but ended up producing something in exactly the way you are hoping. It feels almost serendipitous that it all happened like that. Do you feel the same? Like, did it just sort of feel like it was meant to be?
Yes, it does. You know, it's really interesting. I was going to make an album in a different part of Canada with someone, with a different producer who's very different musician, really great, but very different. And it was going to be like a really sparse, acoustic, almost solo album. And Chris, I met Chris Stringer through a mutual friend of ours. And Chris had seen me play a couple of times in Toronto with a rhythm section that I played with there. And he was quite adamant about it. We had a few conversations about it, and he was really he had a vision sort of straight away. And I'm really glad. In fact, the mutual friend that introduced us, he and I had a conversation, and I said, "What do you think I should do?" And my mutual friend was like, "You know, you just got to listen to Chris's stuff again and make the decision because he's pretty amazing."
Yeah.
And so I did, and I was like, "Yeah, I'm gonna do it," and I'm just so glad I did. Yeah, it does. It feels like, I mean, just the fact that we have the same name. I mean, how weird is that?
That's what I mean. Serendipitous. Is this just some weird connection there? It's just sort of meant to be, I think.
Yeah, and you know, when we really got to know each other, it was like, you know, you just know when you sort of find your people. You know, like Chris and I have a really similar sense of humor. We approach things musically kind of similarly, and he's just been so invested. He's really proud of this record and has been a massive supporter of mine throughout this whole process. And so, yeah, I mean, aside from the fact that we made a really great album together and he helped me to realize all these kind of artistic goals, I just have a really great friend too. So
fantastic.
I'm grateful to him for a lot of things. Yeah.
Nice. I mean, the sound on this record is beautiful. There's some really great layering in there. Just the intertwined guitar lines. And I believe you sort of recorded a lot of these tracks yourself, but you had a band in doing most like the backing tracks as well.
Yeah. So we tracked. There's a rhythm section and a keys and synth player. So the four of us tracked all of the band tracks. We tracked together, and I played, you know, one track of guitar with them, obviously, and sang. So some of the sort of original vocals were the ones that we used. Some of them I redid.
Okay.
But and then I spent we probably spent 4 or 5 days trekking together like that. And then I spent the rest of the time, the rest of the 2 weeks with Chris, just overdubbing, you know, like dozens of guitar layers.
You can hear
which
it.
Which I love. I'm really into that stuff. And Chris has this incredible kind of macro vision of how it's going to sound. And he'd make me do this really, really kind of like small little parts. And I wasn't quite sure of the context of what it was. But when I heard it, you know, in the mix, it was like, it was, a revelation. He's very clever, man.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, really good. Now, it feels an obvious question to ask, that this is a personal record to you, because one listen would answer that. But it's also describing, I'm sort of described this album as a metamorphosis or like a reset. Does that sound like an accurate description for this album? I mean, it's album number 6.
Totally. And yeah, it is. You know, it's, I think that it's kind of hard to separate the changes that I've gone through as a person and as a musician, because, you know, it's the same thing, you know, it's, and it's just a process of facing really intense change and facing, you know, just kind of finally dealing with some sort of old stuff that was really making it hard for me to connect to myself and connect to writing and connect to other people. And so once I went through that process over a couple of years, and as you say, like while I was making the record, I was really at the beginning of this process. So, it just helped to, I mean, I could feel making it that it was, I was in a different place, as a musician, you know, as a writer. And, it definitely marks, I think it marks a real, like to me, it feels like a beginning of the next part of my career, you know, like,
yeah,
I just feel like I'm now able to connect with myself more clearly. And there's a straighter line between my experience and the way that I can express that, you know. And I didn't have that before, because I was sort of, you know, there was a lot of, I don't know, behavioral stuff and alcohol and that sort of stuff that was in the way of those connections. So I think it's not a transformative record, but it's about a transformation. Yes, definitely.
And there's tracks on the album which see you delving into your own past. You've got My History in there, First Time Really Feeling. And then you sort of reflections on other things like Victoria and the things that I now know. You've definitely shared a lot of your thoughts and feelings and history in this record, and you haven't been afraid to sort of put it all out there. I'd like to play The Things That I Now Know in a second. And this is quite a, you know, this is sort of talking about Indigenous Australia in a way that maybe some people don't think about. What was the sort of inspiration between this song?
Yeah, I think I wrote this song a few years ago, probably a couple of years before we made the record. And I don't know. I mean, I've thought, particularly since my kind of mid-20s, when I really started to see a lot more of the country and make a lot of friends and relationships with people in different parts of the country and you know, read more and begin to more fully understand the history of migrant Australia and, you know, First Nations Australia and my own ancestry, which is kind of, you know, Anglo European. And I think that there's a grappling that goes on for me internally about what, you know, the idea that my family came here, some of them as convicts, some of them as people that were coming from, you know, probably poverty or bleak lives to make their lives better, but what the implications were for First Nations people of that, of my ancestors coming here, you know. And I think it's interesting that, I mean, I feel strong connection to Australia, of course. I feel, and you know, the country that I was born on and all that sort of stuff, but to me it exists, you know, it exists through a prism of First Nations experience and what that means for all of migrant Australia to be living on Aboriginal land, and you know, that it's complicated, and Australia has a very brutal history, And it's that I think about it a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and this is a way for me to begin to try and articulate what it feels like to have those thoughts and those feelings, and that it really is quite a visceral, it's in my body, you know, I feel it in my body. And it's the first kind of first attempt to try and articulate this stuff. And I'm going to need to continually articulate it in art or even in my own sort of mind, you know, forever, because it's just a massively expansive subject. Yeah,
it certainly is. And I think you did really well with this track. I'd love to talk to you about the stylings of it in a second, but we're going to play it right now. We're talking to Liz Stringer on the line right now. We're talking about her sixth album, First Time Really Feeling. And right now I'm going to play The Things That I Now Know. You're on 2SCR's The Tuck Shop.
My island, my despicable beast, an arch into the ocean, as your birth was blocked in breach, and in the ready wild, my body and my soul divide themselves between you and the blood that's in my bones. Oh, in the early winters there lay slicks upon the flat from the snow that split from mountains that would thud and puff and crack. The white birds screaming murder through the drifts of clouds and sparks, and nested in the tallest, thick with scent and dripping bark. Oh, my tongue and swells my chest and aches and pulls and tugs. My instinct cannot reconcile the things that I now know. Those strong hands slapped away like children at a ball. Oh, will I ever know great knowledge? Is it even mine to take? I dreamt I saw an answer, and a child was its face. I'm sorry, and my children will be too, if I don't do any better with the blood that's in my bones. Oh.
You're on The Tuck Shop on 2SER. That track right there is Liz Stringer with The Things That I Now Know. And we've got Liz on the line. We can answer all the questions about the album and that song in particular. Hey, Liz.
Hello.
Hello. That track, it really hits me, and I just feel like it's a really beautiful and articulate way to talk about this uneasy, you know, history that Australia has, and we how we feel because we love being in this country, but we know that the history and not that old history, and how much pain and hurt has gone through it. But I think you articulate it really well in these lyrics. Was it hard to write, or did it sort of just flow?
Yeah, it was hard to write, and I you know, I don't know whether I've, I don't know. I wouldn't say that I sort of listen to that and go, oh yeah, I've nailed it, because it, you know, as I say, it's like it is something that continually sort of unfolds in me internally, and you know that it is very recent history, and it's and the repercussions of that brutality are played out every day still, you know, every single day, and it's, you know, it's really, it's just a huge topic, and I think I know that I, you know, I grew up in the 80s, was at high school in the 90s, and I never learned. I know people say this a lot, but I do think it is representative of this sort of sickness of silence that Australia has around questions of its history. You know, that kids aren't brought up learning about and in incorporating, you know, Indigenous culture into the way that they think and experience the world, you know, Indigenous and non-Indigenous kids, and then also to talk openly and honestly about the our past. I just think it's, you know, it's like if you think about a person who kind of represses stuff and doesn't talk about it, eventually it doesn't end well, and that's what is happening to Australia. It doesn't go away, it just festers, and you know,
We need to talk about it, and we need to educate the children as much as we can about it, all of the bad stuff as well as the good. It's vital. The styling of that song, it feels like it almost like an Irish old traditional song or something like that, in the sort of the flow of it. Is that something that you thought about when you were creating it?
No, not consciously, but I think probably it, you know, that stuff creeps into my melodic writing quite a lot, because I grew up listening to a lot of that. My dad is a musician, and you know, played a lot of Irish, Scottish folk music, and so I think that probably there's something really kind of melancholic and and sad. Oh no, that's kind of means the same thing, but you know what I mean. That's and nostalgic about that sort of melodic movement to me. So it tends to come out in a lot of my songs.
Well, we're going back to touring. COVID is hopefully going to settle down. But you've already been on tour this year with the Epic Midnight Oil and their Macerata live show. That must have been an experience. What was it like?
It was, surreal. You know, it kind of feels like it almost didn't happen in a way, just because it was just such a surreal experience. And we were so lucky that the tour went ahead. You know, it was sort of, I mean, 2 weeks after we played in Brisbane and then the Central Coast, there were epic storms, and Brisbane had a few COVID cases and shut down. And we were just, it was a 7-show tour. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah. What's it like, sort of people like, you know, legends of Pete Garrett and Rob Hurst, like those guys, you know, did you know them already before that, or was that sort of the first time you'd met?
I'd met Rob like a couple of times, very briefly, but I hadn't met any of the other guys, and they were just, all of them were just, made us feel so, you know, I was singing backing vocals with Leah Flanagan, who's a really
she's amazing.
Close friend of mine.
That
was really fun. The two of us were sort of just like this little unit. and we just had an amazing time. Like from the first rehearsal, all the guys were very warm and gave us heaps of time, you know, really made sure that we were comfortable with what we were doing. And I don't know. It was just, it was a dream. And then the shows, like to be on stage with a band that, you know, I consider to be one of the most idiosyncratic and sort of melodically musically intelligent rock and roll bands that Australia's ever produced was just bizarre. It was bizarre. And Leah and I both just tried to soak in every minute and really enjoy it. And we did, like, over the month. So, to be with those guys was great. And then also the rest of the Macarada collaborators, who were all amazing artists and great people. And yeah, it was such a great experience.
Very cool. I'm hoping that would also give you a lot more people sort of going, that's Liz Stringer. Like, people will see, because you've done a lot of stuff. You've done collaborations with Jen Clore and Mia Dyson, of course. You've been, this is your sixth album, but I feel like more people need to know who you are, Liz. And I hope
that's why I teach them.
But people can get to know you, and they can go and see you at your live shows, because you're doing only a small tour at the moment. But I guess you just got to be, wary with all of the incidents. We've got gigs at Anglesey. I don't know. I think I said that wrong. Adelaide, Sydney, Melbourne, and Darwin as well over June. Just a little 5-show tour, but looking for more later, hopefully.
Yeah, we're gonna hopefully do a much more extensive tour later in the year. This is really just, just a way for us to make sure that we're not, that COVID doesn't usurp us. And, I mean, who knows? It's impossible to make any predictions, but we're really hoping that by the end of the year, things might be even more settled. Who knows?
Yeah, he's hoping. So you're taking around a band with you, obviously, on this tour?
Yeah, we are. And, it's so fun to play with the band again. It's just great to be on stage. It's great to be in a room full of people. It's just thank goodness. I really missed it. And I do, as I say, I really feel for friends of mine who are living in other parts of the world who are still nowhere near doing that. So I'm well aware how lucky we are here.
Well, congratulations again on the album. It's been such a pleasure listening to it. I felt like I've been lucky being able to listen to it for like a week before it came out, but now it's out for everybody to listen to. So just go on and grab it on Bandcamp. I think this weekend we had it's next weekend actually is the free Bandcamp weekend. So if you want to go, give all the proceeds to Liz Stringer, then jump onto Bandcamp and grab the album there. I'm going to leave this interview with the track, which one of my favorites on the album is The Metrologist, which I've read that you talked to somebody in a pub. I can't remember what it was. And you're talking about their job, and their job was measuring things. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was actually at the junkyard in Maitland. Many of your listeners are probably familiar with. I got chatting to a friend of a friend, who's a metrologist. And, metrology is the science of measurement. I didn't know that. Right. Well, I think I should start getting, sponsored by the Metrologists, Club of Australia, because a lot of people are saying to me, I didn't know what that was, and looking it up. So I'm just helping to spread the word about measurement science. But, we just had a really interesting conversation about his job and some of the more bizarre aspects of what measurement is. And it stayed with me this song is kind of about juxtaposing that exact science with my life, particularly at the time when I was drinking, the last couple of years of drinking, when I was just, there was so much chaos, and obviously life as a musician is so erratic, and every week is different, which I love. But when you're feeling a bit chaotic mentally, there's not much left to ground you, So, it was sort of an ode to wishing that I could be a little bit more like a scientist.
More measured,
exactly.
Liz Stringer, thank you again so much for chatting to us here on the Tuck Shop on 2SER. We're excited to have it as our feature album this week as well, so we'll be playing a whole bunch of it throughout the week. Good luck with the shows coming up, and we'll hopefully see you in Sydney at the Vanguard, I think. That's around the corner from my house. That sounds good to me. I'll see you there.
Thanks, Mick. See you then. We've got Karen Lee Andrews opening with her trio, which I'm really excited about because I'm a huge fan of hers. And thank you so much to 2SER. You're just legends. I appreciate the support so much. Thank you.
Not a problem. And have a great rest of your weekend, and we'll chat soon.
Thanks, Mick. See you, mate.